WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is Watch This. Derek Gary sitting in for the vacationing Chris Earl on your Wednesday afternoon. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 93 degrees outside our WMFO studios. The mighty, mighty WMFO Studio C air conditioner is struggling to keep me cool here. Underpowered as it is, it says it's 71 degrees, but I'm telling you, it's a little warmer than that. Good news is that the rain or the heat is coming to an end later in the day tomorrow. We'll be out of this, and we're going to have a very, very nice Labor Day weekend. But this is, if you are of a certain age, if you were of memory age in the 1970s, late 1970s, or the 1980s, you remember this as the kind of day that we hid in the movie theaters. Most towns had a two-screen second-run movie theater that got the movies long after they had worn out their big box office at the multiplex and the big downtown theaters. So you could go in and you could see a movie for $2. And most importantly, the movie theater had something that few of us had at home back in those days, and that was air conditioning. So, For those of you who remember those days, you probably remember this as being one of the many, many sounds of summer. And that was what going to the movies sounded like. If you went to the local General Cinemas, there was the one in Saugus. You might remember that. You might remember the General Cinemas in Stoneham. Maybe you remember that little tiny two-screen theater that they had in Alston. There were a lot of them around, and it was a great place to go on a hot summer day when it was too hot to be outside and just go watch a movie and be cool for a couple of hours. Or if it was nighttime and it was too hot to be in the house, you could go out and see a movie and it was cheap and the family could go. And if you were growing up around that time and lived near one of those movie theaters, over the course of the summer, you saw just about everything that came out. So you probably remember a lot of those great movies from the 70s and 80s. Here's a slightly more recent version of that General Cinemas intro because I love it so much and remember it so fondly. Summertime sounds from the 1970s. Coming up later in the show tonight, we're going to be taking a look at some of the worst movies ever made that you should see. We're going to do bad movies, so bad they're good. I'm also going to give you some great summertime movies. As we head into Labor Day weekend, this is a good time to check out the last of the summer movies before we head into fall and start surrounding ourselves with the spooky Halloween movies. But I wanted to open up tonight talking about Neil Simon. Neil Simon passed away over the weekend at the age of 91. I was among the people who was surprised that Neil Simon was still alive. Nothing against Neil Simon, obviously. But it's been a while since there's been anything new from Neil Simon. But during the time when I was growing up and during the late 60s, into, I would say, the very early 1980s, Neil Simon was probably one of the most influential voices in all of American media. His shows were hits on Broadway. They were turned into hits on film. They were turned into hits on television. A lot of that 70s, everyman, everyday life aesthetic that moved through cinema and theater and television had a lot to do with the success of Neil Simon. Neil Simon is not somebody who's necessarily, other than The Odd Couple, which everybody knows, Neil Simon isn't necessarily somebody who jumps to the front of your mind unless you are a big-time theater fan. If you were a theater fan, then you absolutely know who Neil Simon is, appreciate who Neil Simon is. His stuff is in revival all the time. Some of it has become dated because some of it was very much of its era. I'm going to press that button before I do anything else here. But at the time that Neil Simon's work was coming out, when it was new, it was a bit of a revelation because Neil Simon wrote about the people that surrounded him and the world that surrounded him and found the humor in the everyday. These weren't wild, elaborate farces, which is what a lot of comedy was at that point in time. These weren't the sort of traditional family-oriented pieces that dominated television at the time. Neil Simon was very plugged into the world that was around him and had a very grounded sense of humor that sort of over the course of the 1970s, we moved away from the sort of slapstick farcical comedy that had dominated in the 1960s and moved into the more everyday type of comedy that they sort of refined and perfected as we got into the early 1980s. So I've got five Neil Simon films that I think you ought to go see. These are not necessarily the greatest hits. These are not necessarily films that people would consider the best, the very best. If you're looking for Barefoot in the Park, no, it's not here. But they are great, funny, important Neil Simon films. And we are going to start with, for my money, I think one of the funniest. And this was 1970 for Neil Simon.
Is that a beautiful city, or is that a beautiful city?
Oh, that's a beautiful city.
George, they can't find the bag.
They lost our luggage.
Flight 543.
Taxi!
Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis are the out-of-towners in Neil Simon's outrageous comedy about New York City.
Hold it. What's wrong? Put your hands up.
Oh, my God!
Against that wall, and don't make a sound.
When they take you for an out-of-towner, they really take you.
You mean to tell me that I was mugged while I was sleeping?
You're not telling me you didn't hold the room for me.
Man, move it!
Oh, my God, we're being kidnapped.
I'm a business executive from Ohio.
Hey, folks.
Look, I've got no place to sleep. I've got no money. I want to know what the city intends to do about this.
It's hope and courage.
We don't surrender. You hear that, New York? We don't quit. Now, how do you like that? You go ahead and you can rob me and starve me and break my teeth and my wife's ankles. I'm not leaving.
The Out-of-Towners from 1970, Jack Lemmon and Sandy Dennis. Jack Lemmon is an executive who's been called to New York for an interview. And things start going wrong when his plane gets diverted to Boston. And he has to find a way of getting to New York, of course, without his luggage, without any money. Sandy Dennis, as his wife, is priceless in this film. And you heard it a couple of times in that trailer. Her, oh my God, is her reaction to everything. This is one of the first films that really went after sort of the grubby underbelly of New York City in a modern way. It's very realistic. It's very sort of cinema verite in the way it approaches it. Because they get to New York, there is a garbage strike going on. There is a hotel strike going on. Everybody's on strike. The streets are lined with garbage. He has no place to stay. He's getting mugged. He's getting kidnapped. Everything that can go wrong goes wrong. And it's very much the sort of suburban nightmare vision of New York that would take hold over the course of the 1970s, because while The Out-of-Towners was played as comedy in 1970, by 1977 and 1978, a lot of that was reality in New York City. So, you know, Neil Simon has his finger on the pulse of what's coming next. It's also one of the great all-time performances by a man and a woman as a married couple. Sandy Dennis and Jack Lemmon are just spectacular in this film. There is a very bad recent remake with Steve Martin. Avoid Like the Plague. If you're going to see The Out-of-Towners, you are going to see the 1970 original because it is a vastly superior movie. Another reason, local folks, you might want to check it out. Logan Airport and South Station from 1970 both appear in this film. First part of the movie takes place in Boston and then goes down to New York. It's interesting to see how much things have changed if you spend a fair amount of time in both of those cities. It's interesting to see if you know the history of what was happening in New York, how well Neil Simon sort of documented where things were going without ever intending to do that. And absolutely worth seeing if you just want to laugh at a very, very funny motion picture. So, The Out-of-Towners, that's one I recommend. Next one I recommend is a little bit more recent. This is one of the great later Neil Simon films from 1988.
This is hot. Never got this hot in Brooklyn. It's like Africa hot. Tarzan couldn't take this kind of hot.
I'd like you to answer when your name is called. The answer to that question is ho. Do I make myself clear, Jerome?
Ho, yes. Ho, what? Ho, nothing.
You having trouble understanding me, Jerome?
Ho, no. I mean no ho, Sergeant. It's just plain ho.
You're embarrassing me in front of the lizards and the buzzards.
What would you do if the Japanese army was behind you?
Surrender and get some sleep.
Okay, honey. Do your stuff. Careful, you got your knee on my stomach.
I'm sorry.
Didn't anyone ever teach you anything?
Well, my brother showed me a few things. You look a lot different than my brother. I saw this stuff in the Bronx Zoo once. Gorillas were throwing it at each other.
Guess we have to look for another way around, men. Epstein, reassemble Jerome's weapon. Deep shit, Epstein. How deep would you say he was in, Jerome?
About up to here.
Biloxi Blues, 1988. For Neil Simon. This is the second story in his Eugene trilogy, which is autobiographical. It starts with Brighton Beach Memoirs, goes to Biloxi Blues, ends with Broadway Bound. And this is the one most worth seeing out of those three films for a couple of reasons. The big reason to go see it is to go see Ferris Bueller himself, Matthew Broderick, playing the role of Eugene Jerome. Matthew Broderick played the role on Broadway. So he came into this film knowing exactly what he needed to do. He'd done it time and time and time again. You also get peak Christopher Walken, peak 1980s Christopher Walken in this film, in one of his funnier roles, because he's just here to chew scenery and be hilarious, which he is. Lots and lots of great lines in this. It was directed by Mike Nichols. It is out of the three Eugene Trilogy films that have been adapted, the one that has the most connection to its Broadway source material. Obviously, in terms of staging, no, but in terms of who's involved in it, in terms of the way that they approach it, it's as close as you're going to get to seeing a Neil Simon show at the movies, with the benefit of original cast. This third one, from 1976, if you are a sensitive millennial type who cannot deal with the changing standards of art and the changing standards of what was funny, I'm going to tell you to give this one a hard skip. For everybody else, it's a pretty darn funny movie.
I don't feel good about this.
There's a number on the wall for all of us, Angel.
Neil Simon's Murder by Death. Meanwhile, a A short, sinister man who looks exactly like Truman Capote is preparing a diabolical weekend for the greatest detectives in the world, Sidney Wang.
Don't I think, Pop? Perfect place for a murder.
Conversation like a television set on honeymoon. Unnecessary.
Dick and Dora Charleston.
Dear, would you walk now in the other way? My leg tends to look like a tree in this fog.
Sam Diamond.
I think we picked ourselves a queer bird, Angel. Anything else?
He has no pinkies.
No pinkies? Jimmy Twain has only got 8 fingers?
No, no, he's got 10. He just doesn't have any pinkies.
As we join them, our 5 clue persons and their faithful companions are trapped in a mysterious old mansion where a fiendishly ingenious crime is about to take place.
The victim is here at this very table at this very moment. And so too, ladies and gentlemen, is the murderer.
His most stupid theory I ever heard.
One of us is a mad killer and not to be trusted.
I hope he knows how to stop that thing.
Returning to the kitchen...
Who are you?
The blind butler encounters the dumb cook.
Oh, you must be the new kitchen maid.
And what has happened to the butler? The cook? Where's the cook?
2 minutes to midnight.
Gunshots, monsieur. Gunshots, Pop.
Gunshots, Sam. Gunshots, Dickie.
I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
I like it, but do not understand it.
That can only mean one thing. And I don't know what it is.
It means, are these 5 monumental minds any match for murder by death? Eileen Brennan, Truman Capote, James Coco.
What happened?
Peter Falk, Alec Guinness, Elsa Lanchester.
The murderer is...
David Niven, Peter Sellers, Maggie Smith, Nancy Walker, Estelle Winwood, and Myron? Who is the one who done it in the number one who done it? Neil Simon's new comedy, Murder by Death.
Should make an exciting weekend.
Murder by Death, Neil Simon's 1978 send-up of the mystery novel, the mystery movie. He's basically taking on all of the tropes of the mystery genre. Parodies of the world's greatest detectives, including Hercule Poirot, Miss Marple, Charlie Chan, Sam Spade, and Nick and Nora Charles, are all invited to this mansion by a mystery man who offers them $1 million if they can solve a murder. The house is full of all kinds of wild gimmicks and traps. Truman Capote himself plays the millionaire who invites them to the house. This is the only acting role Truman Capote ever had in his entire career. And it is worth seeing the film just to see Truman Capote, who is actually fantastic in this film. The problem with the film, from a contemporary standpoint, is Peter Sellers, who is playing Sidney Wang. It is a parody of the Charlie Chan character. And he is doing it in full Charlie Chan makeup with a broken English Asian accent. It doesn't track as well in 2018 as it did 40 years ago because it's Peter Sellers, and Peter Sellers is brilliant. He gets a little bit of a pass. This is nowhere near as bad as Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. But it is, for those who are bothered by that sort of thing, the sort of thing that will turn you off to this movie. You'll watch 2 seconds of it and you'll be like, nope, I've had enough. If you can accept that, if you would accept that we did things like that in movies back in the 70s, then you're in for a treat, because the cast here is amazing. Peter Falk, who had been playing detectives on television forever, has a leading role in this. Maggie Smith is in this. David Niven is in this. Alec Guinness, right around the time that he's doing Star Wars, also gets this film. And Alec Guinness is spectacular in this film. He is the blind butler. But then as all of the various detectives are sitting around trying to solve the murder, he is also playing all of these other, acting out all these other different scenarios and roles. It is a brilliant, brilliant turn. James Coco is in this as the, I believe is the Hercule Poirot character. And also, Nancy Walker, who you may remember from television. Nancy Walker is hilarious, is in this as well. A little bit tricky to find. It is available on DVD. I don't know if it's ever been released on Blu-ray. One of those films worth seeking out if you get a chance to see it. The next one, for my money, is probably the best Neil Simon film. The one that gets closest, I think, to his sort of overall vision of what the world was and what his storytelling was and what he was trying to put forward into the world. It also happened to win an Academy Award, which we'll talk about, and got a whole bunch of nominations. This is from 1971.
From the moment they met, they knew it was the real thing.
Make it fast.
Hi, I think there's been some kind of mistake. I sublet this apartment from friend of mine.
Technically, that apartment belongs to me. Now, do I come up there now? We discuss this amicably? Or do I storm the place in the morning?
5 minutes.
The only practical solution is that we share the apartment.
I'll bet.
You win. Get your bags. You get the small bedroom.
Say hello to Richard Dreyfuss.
A horse! A horse! My kingdom for the horse!
Say hello to Marcia Mason.
An actor.
Say hello to Quinn Cummings.
I think he's kind of cute. He reminds me of a dog that nobody wants.
You are never to think he's cute. Never.
You don't think I'm sexy?
Are you kidding?
Say hello to The Goodbye Girl, right? Neil Simon's first new comedy since Murder by Death.
If you don't let go of me, I am going to punch your other eye out.
It's a relationship built on trust.
Is that a girl in there?
I certainly hope so.
And mutual respect.
I thought you said you were decent.
I am decent. I also happen to be naked.
More than neighbors.
Isn't there a church where you can do that?
Less than lovers. Mismatched roommates living alone together.
Don't you ever do that again.
Your lips may say no, no, but there's yes, yes in your eyes.
What begins as simple aggravation.
What is it?
Blossoms into utter hostility.
I don't like the panties drying on the rod.
The Goodbye Girl is about failure.
Not bad. My problem is I need him very young.
Young? Okay, I'll work on it.
The Goodbye Girl is about success.
It's my first standing ovation.
The Goodbye Girl is about to become one of your favorite movies. Richard Dreyfuss.
I said it was formal, kid.
And Marcia Mason.
Don't panic. Even Ginger was nervous the first time she danced with me.
In Neil Simon's delightful new comedy, The Goodbye Girl. Say hello to laughter. Say hello to tears. Say hello to The Goodbye Girl.
Paula, don't play games with me. My socks are underwater.
Let me tell you goodbye.
My apologies, I said 1971, that was actually 1977 for The Goodbye Girl. Okay, five Oscar nominations. Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, Best Screenplay, and Best Picture. Richard Dreyfuss actually won Best Actor for his role in the film and was the youngest actor ever to win the Academy Award, a title that he held for 25 years until 2012 when Adrian Brody took the Oscar for The Pianist. I like to think of this film as a prequel to All That Jazz, the Ken Fosse film, because structurally it is very similar. You know, you have two high-strung creative types, one who is an actor, the other who is a dancer, and the dancer has a daughter, living together, trying to manage their lives together. And one of the great things about this film is if you are in your 20s, if you're in your 30s, this is a film that really resonates because both of these characters have been chasing their dreams almost to the exclusion of everything else. I'm going to say that the dancer, it's probably not fair to say at the exclusion of everything else because she does have a daughter. But her whole life has been building up to something that hasn't happened yet. The film opens with her boyfriend leaving her to go on a film shoot and giving the keys to the apartment to Richard Dreyfuss, who he has sublet the apartment to without bothering to tell his girlfriend. So now none of them have any place to live. She doesn't want to go. Dreyfuss needs a place to stay, so she agrees to let him stay. And their relationship builds from that point onward. Both of them are at this point in their lives where they have worked and worked and worked and never really tasted the success that they were hoping for. They are both on the verge of giving up on the dream and just sort of giving up on the life altogether. And in each other, they find everything that they're looking for personally that will allow them to develop professionally. And this is another very unconventional kind of story from Neil Simon. We are dealing with an unmarried woman with a 10-year-old daughter. That happens all the time. Wasn't the sort of thing you saw much of on film. Richard Dreyfuss, you know, the perpetual bachelor who has put everything into his career and hasn't had any time for anything else, any sort of a meaningful relationship. It's a very sweet film. It's a very funny film. And the heart behind it and the respect and warmth that Neil Simon has for these characters. Rumor has it that this film was based loosely on the life of Dustin Hoffman and what happened when he left to go to Hollywood to start making films. Originally, it was going to be made with Robert De Niro in the lead role. And they actually started shooting it. Robert De Niro was not playing it the way that Neil Simon wanted it played. So Robert De Niro was dropped. Richard Dreyfuss was hired, and the director ultimately changed. And Neil Simon went out and rewrote the film, basically to make it work better for Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason. It is the kind of auteur film that typified the 1970s and that opened the door. We take these stories for granted today, but in the 1970s, stories like that were still a little bit of a revelation. So for a lot of reasons, it is my personal favorite of all of Neil Simon's work. But the one that most people are going to label as their favorites is certainly this one. And no list of Neil Simon films is complete, and no Neil Simon viewing experience is complete without seeing where it really all began.
What's wrong, Oscar?
Something wrong with this system, that's what's wrong. I don't think that two single men living alone in a big 8-room apartment should have a cleaner house than my mother.
Starring Jack Lemmon, a hypochondriac, a fuss budget, neater than neat, cleaner than clean. No wonder his wife kicked him out.
Stop that, will you? What are you doing?
I'm trying to clear up my ears.
Did it open up?
I think I strained my throat.
Walter Matthau, another guy whose wife left him. And his pad looks like she left it a long time ago.
Who wants food? What do you got? I got brown sandwiches and green sandwiches. Which one do you want?
What's the green?
It's either very new cheese or very old meat.
I'll take the brown.
Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, who try to enjoy all possible delights of a shared bachelor apartment.
Bowling. Bowling is a wonderful exercise, Felix, but that's not the kind of relaxation I had in mind. I mean, the night was made for other things.
Like what?
Like, unless I get to touch something soft in the next 2 weeks, I'm in big trouble.
They're together, bringing to all America the laughter of Neil Simon's Broadway smash hit.
Boy, this is really nice.
Yeah.
and ever so much cooler than our place.
Oh, cool. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, it's like equatorial Africa on our side of the building.
Well, last night it was so bad, Gwen and I sat there in nature's own, cooling ourselves in front of the open fridge. Can you imagine such a thing?
Well, I'm working at it.
Honestly.
You had your chance to talk last night. I beg you to come upstairs with me. If you want to live here, I don't want to see you, I don't want to hear you, I don't want to smell you cooking. Now, kindly remove that spaghetti from my poker tape.
It's not spaghetti. It's linguine.
Mm-hmm. Now it's garbage.
Come on! Take that out!
Idiot!
Hey, Oscar! What do I make for dinner?
Now listen, why don't you just take a tranquilizer?
Go to your room.
Fuss Budget Felix and Perpetual Man-Child Slob Oscar are American icons, and The Odd Couple is really where it all begins for Neil Simon. The show originally began on Broadway. It was a massive hit. It was such a massive hit that they had to make a movie out of it. Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau blew it out of the park. The movie became a massive hit. So much of a massive hit, they had to make a TV show out of it, which is what most people remember today, which is Tony Randall and Jack Klugman as Felix and Oscar in the TV version of The Odd Couple, which ran for many, many years. One of the reasons this is so significant is because a story like The Odd Couple really had never been seen in the movies or on television prior to this. This was an entirely new kind of family story, which was about a couple of friends, a couple of middle-aged divorced guys who are divorced for very obvious reasons. They are the characters that tended to be sidekicks or, you know, cameos in other kinds of movies where you'd have this one sort of wacky guy who just couldn't get his life together and everybody would make fun of him. Neil Simon took those types of characters and put them front and center and basically said, you know what? This is what's happening right now. This is what's going on in America. People are getting divorced. Middle-aged men are moving in together and living as roommates because they need the money and they need the support. And if you're a poker fan, and you know The Odd Couple, either the stage show or the film, you know that the poker scenes are one of the main reasons to go out and watch this. A fantastic movie. It holds up beautifully 50 years after it first came out and had such a huge influence on everything that came after it. Opened the doors for things like the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Lou Grant and Bob Newhart and all of those other sort of non-family comedies that populated television in the 1970s and rolled on into the kind of workplace ensemble shows that we see in the 1980s. The sensibilities and the sense of humor and the willingness to pursue those kinds of stories grew directly out of the success of The Odd Couple. It is a huge film. It is a landmark play in American theater, and I will tell you that I think Goodbye Girl is Neil Simon's absolute best. But if I'm looking for number two, it is definitely The Odd Couple. It is WMFO Medford. This is Watch This. Derek Gary sitting in for the vacationing Chris Earle. When we come back, summer has a few days left to go. And this is a perfect time, if you got the long weekend, to check out one more movie about summer to say goodbye. I will give you five films that you might want to check out. And in this next bit, if you remember the voice that we heard for the Goodbye Girl preview, the Goodbye Girl trailer, you may recognize that voice again in one of these commercials. He was one of the original golden voices of Hollywood. Can't remember his name, can't recall his name. I'll have to dig that out for you. But I'm sure you'll recognize the voice. We'll be back in just a minute. This is WMFO Medford. We'll be right back.
There is nothing new under the sun, but under the small green fourth moon of Yavin, there is quite a different story. Director George Lucas and 20th Century Fox present Star Wars. Luke Skywalker is on a daring mission to rescue a beautiful princess, and all he needs is a little help from his friends. Han Solo, space pirate, and Chewie, his giant Wookiee, C-3PO, human relations cyborg, and his counterpart R2-D2, and the mysterious Jedi Knight. Never before in the history of movies has so much time and technology been spent just for fun. Star Wars. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. This is Watch This. Derek Gary sitting in for Chris Earle tonight. He'll be back with you next week. Coming up a little bit later in the show, movies so bad they're good. I'm going to give you some recommendations for terrible, terrible, awful, awful movies that you just have to watch because they're that much fun. Grease, by the way, not a summer movie. Not a summer movie at all. It is a fall movie. And a good one to play on back to school day, because that's where this song takes place. But before we go back to school, let's celebrate summer for one more weekend, shall we? I have got my picks for the 5 greatest summer movies of all time. These are 5 summer movies that you absolutely need to see. 5 movies that if you haven't seen them by now, I don't know what's wrong with you. Go see these movies. They are fantastic movies. If you have seen them, see them again, because this is a great time to check out summer movies as we say farewell to summer and enjoy our 3-day weekend. So we are going to begin this list with a film set a short time ago in a state not all that far from here.
American Graffiti. Where were you in 62?
Special one and jump into your candy colored custom or your screaming machine, cruise downtown and catch American Graffiti.
American Graffiti?
Baby, what's that?
It's a movie.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Go back in time.
Where were you in 62?
Is that you in that beautiful car? Jeez, what a waste of machinery.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around 10 o'clock tonight.
What did you say? Someone wants me. Someone roaming the streets wants me.
And I bet you're smart enough to get us some brew.
A ballpoint pen, a pint of old Harper.
Okay, you got an ID for the liquor?
Not, I left it in the car.
You'll have to get it before.
Oh, well, I forgot the car.
We're finally getting out of this turkey camp. You just can't stay 17 forever.
If you ever get tired of going steady with somebody that ain't around, I'm up for grabs.
Well, that'll be the day.
If I had a boyfriend, he'd pound you.
Friendly ride. Tears I cannot.
What's wrong?
Go to hell.
Get your boogaloos out, baby. The Wolfman is everywhere.
16 candles.
You know Toby Juarez?
We killed him last night.
Excuse me, I think we've had an accident.
Well, I won't report you this time, but next time, just watch it, will you?
Standard, man. I can dig it.
It's one of those great old movies about romance, racing, and rock and roll.
Oh, American Graffiti. American Graffiti. Where were you in 62?
American Graffiti. If you have not seen this movie, I don't know what to tell you. It's a film that's sort of been forgotten in recent years. This is the movie that George Lucas made before Star Wars. And it's basically set on the last day of summer, so perfect for this weekend, in 1962 in California. And high school students and future college students are enjoying their last night of freedom, basically by driving their cars up and down the local strip, getting into various fights and drag races and conflicts with each other, trying to get lucky, doing all the things that kids are going to do on their last night of freedom. This is a very early Harrison Ford film. Cindy Williams is in this film. Wolfman Jack. The legendary Wolfman Jack is in this film. But the most interesting story in this film is a young Ron Howard, who you may know better as a film director, but who back in the day starred in a little series called Happy Days. Now, the interesting story about this is that ABC had originally commissioned a pilot called Love in Television, or Love in the Age of Television, or something like that, for their series Love American Style. And Love in Television was basically what Happy Days was. It was about a family in the 1950s, and Ron Howard was sort of the centerpiece of the whole thing. It was told through his character's point of view. So ABC does the pilot, runs it on Love American Style, doesn't really go anywhere, but George Lucas sees it, casts Ron Howard in American Graffiti. American Graffiti is a huge hit. So ABC greenlights Happy Days and puts Ron Howard back at the center of the show. So that is how Happy Days came to be a thing. And of course, Laverne and Shirley spun off from Happy Days with Cindy Williams from from American Graffiti. Great summertime movie. If you don't think it holds up well today, it's because you haven't seen it. A lot of what's in this film is very universal. You know, there's still kids trying to buy alcohol underage. There's still kids racing cars. There's still kids defying authority. One of the interesting things about it is just how much these kids get away with in this movie. And some of that may be Hollywood fantasy, but you get the feeling watching it that some of it was also real. I have to give a shout out to my listeners, my eagle-eared listeners, who reminded me that the voice we heard in that Goodbye Girl trailer, as well as in the Star Wars trailer, was none other than the voice of God himself, Don LaFontaine, who recorded more than 5,000 promos for movies, TV shows, commercials, all kinds of things over his storied career. Don LaFontaine died in 2008. You can still hear him 10 years later in Geico commercials. When you hear that Geico 15 minutes could save you 15% or whatever it is, that is Don LaFontaine toward the end of his life. So he's still very much with us and still the voice of God. My next pick for the top summer films of all time is one of those movies that guys can quote every line from Guys will tell you they can quote every line from Animal House. I've yet to meet too many guys who can actually do that. But I know tons and tons and tons of guys who grew up in the 1980s when this was perpetually on cable who can recite this entire movie by heart because we watched it at least twice a day during the summer.
Welcome to the Bushwood Country Club. The membership's exclusive.
You think I'd join this crummy snobatorium?
The help is outrageous.
What?
The madness is contagious.
Bad language, fooling around on the course, poor caddying.
What is whole place?
Caddyshack, starring Chevy Chase as Ty Webb.
Who is that disgusting man over there?
A sportsman who really knows how to score.
So, what brings you to this nape of the woods, neck of the wave? How come you're here?
Rodney Dangerfield as Al Servant, a big shot.
My dinghy's bigger than your whole boat!
With an even bigger mouth.
Hey, somebody step on a duck.
Ted Knight as Judge Smales, a man of dignity. And a sense of fair play.
I've sentenced boys younger than you to the gas chamber.
Michael O'Keefe as Danny Noonan, a caddy who wants an education and gets one.
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good.
Cindy Morgan as Lacey Underall. She's got a bad reputation, and she's working hard to keep it.
You want to tie me up with some of your ties?
And Bill Murray as Carl Spackler.
Just a harmless squirrel, not a plastic explosive or anything. Nothing to be worried about.
He's not crazy about gophers, but he is crazy.
License to kill gophers by the government of the United Nations.
And introducing Mr. Gopher as himself. You
got to give me advice. I said freeze, gopher!
Caddyshack. It's all about swinging.
Kiss me, you fool.
But not on the course.
Hey, you want to make $14 the hard way?
Ah!
Playing a good game.
That's, he got all of that one.
And talking a better one.
Hey, I should have stayed home and played with myself.
Taking shots.
Ah! That was a bum shot.
And making time.
We couldn't possibly think less of each other.
Controlling your drives.
Wow.
And losing your grip.
Ah. It is! You! Out!
Four.
The man's a menace.
Caddyshack. The comedy with...
From 1980, Caddyshack. You could argue whether or not this is the funniest sports film ever made, because it's not about professional golf. It's about weekend golf. It's about people who play golf recreationally. And if we're going to talk about the funniest sports movie ever made, then that would probably go over to Major League. As the funniest golf movie of all time, there is no question. As one of the funniest summer movies of all time, there is no question. Caddyshack is a movie about a summer job. The whole movie is told through the eyes of our young caddy who is trying to navigate this world and figure out what he's going to do after high school, figure out how to get into law school, figure out how to get on with the rest of his life. And he is caught in between these stuffy millionaires and these new money millionaires, all of whom like him and all of whom are really sort of competing to be the ones that influence him and take him to the next level in his life. There are so many laugh out loud moments in this film. And one of the really interesting things about this film is that unlike a lot of comedies from the early 70s and the early 80s, where you go back and you watch them and there are really, really disturbing things in them, like the rape scene in Revenge of the Nerds, there really isn't any of that in this. The jokes in Caddyshack, by and large, are still funny today. There isn't any sort of out-of-place racial humor. Everybody seems to be having consensual sex in this movie. So everything about it, you know, if you have sensitivity to any of the things in the old movies, it's really not going to be a problem with this. Rodney Dangerfield's first big film role. Absolutely hilarious in this film. Highly, highly, highly recommended. If you look at it and you're like, oh, that was some like 1980 comedy movie. And by the way, those of you who can quote every line in the movie know that there were a couple of lines in that trailer that did not actually make the final cut of the movie, such as the old lady saying, well, that was a bum shot. Nope, not in the film. There's a Chevy Chase line in there that is not in the film. My third film, not a comedy, not necessarily a fun watch, but an absolutely necessary watch. And to this day, even though this film came out in 1989, this is a film that still has an awful lot of important things to say about what's going on in our country.
Universal Pictures presents a new film from Spike Lee.
Good morning, Miss Mother Sister.
Now, Mookie, don't work too hard today. The man says it's going to be hot as the devil.
I've been here 25 years. Well, Sal's famous pizzeria is here to stay.
Trust me.
Mookie, the last time I trusted you, we ended up with a son.
I know you can't stand it. You can't stand it.
Hey, Sal, I'm going to bring for the war here.
You want brothers on the wall?
Love.
Get your own place. You can do what you want to do.
1989, the number. Another summer.
What I tell you about that noise?
What I tell you about them pictures?
Give us what we want. Gotta give us.
You call some brother, talk to him.
You the man.
No, you the man.
No, you the man.
No, you the man.
The first time you turn your back, boom. Ah! Right here, man, in the back.
Y'all take a chill.
You like to sign a petition to boycott Sal's famous pizzeria?
Hear me, what you ought to do is boycott that no good barber that messed up your head.
And that's the double truth.
Deep down inside, I think I need you in black.
Who told you to step on my street? Who told you to walk on my side of the block? Who told you to be in my neighborhood?
I own this brownstone.
Who told you to buy a brownstone on my block, in my neighborhood, on my side of the street?
I can't even hear myself think.
From Spike Lee. Director of School Days and She's Gotta Have It.
Good people, please. If we don't stop this, we can stop it now. We gonna do something we gonna regret for the rest of our lives.
Doctor?
Come on, what? What?
Always do the right thing.
That's it?
That's it.
I got it. I'm gone.
I will say that this film is probably Spike Lee's masterpiece. It out of everything that he's done, his best. It is the hottest day of the summer in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And that lights a fuse on racial tensions that exist between the increasingly black population in the neighborhood and Sal, played by Danny Aiello, who is absolutely magnificent in this film, who's owned a pizzeria on the block for 25 years. And he is more than happy with his customer base, and most customers seem to get along with him. He has two sons, one of whom is very friendly to Mookie, played by Spike Lee, who is his local delivery man, and another son who just does not like black people at all, doesn't trust them, hates them, fears them. That story is the center of the whole thing, but what really makes this movie work is the amount of texture that Spike Lee brings into it. All of the performances in this film are top-notch. The ones that you will remember are all of the little neighborhood characters played by people like Ruby Dee, Ossie Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, who just fit. They're part of the scenery. They're part of the landscape. They're part of the culture. They're part of the values and the government and everything that goes on in this neighborhood. They are the core of it, and they are a community that is simultaneously growing and dying. And the forces at work to separate blacks and whites, and the forces at work that create disparity between blacks and whites, are on vivid display throughout this film. It is not an easy watch. It is a very entertaining film. It has a very, very down ending because the film ultimately escalates into a riot, and the story of the film is actually the story of how the riot began. And the riot is not just a momentary flash of violence. It grows out of years of tension that have existed. Spike Lee addresses racism on both sides, through a variety of different lenses. And this film is a brilliant way of looking at problems that exist in this country, tensions that exist in this country, and understanding the roots of them, the way that people react to them, and the problems that they can cause, the violence and hatred and hostility that they can cause. This is a film that has been selected to the National Film Archive in the Library of Congress as one of the most significant American motion pictures ever made. It's absolutely worthy of that designation. If you're looking for something with a little bit more teeth to it, something a little more challenging and worthwhile for your Labor Day weekend, highly recommend it. If you haven't seen it, I will tell you it is every bit as relevant today as it is then. Everything that Spike Lee does cinematically in this film stands up brilliantly. This is still a gorgeous, very modern feeling film. You got some Samuel L. Jackson in here. There is so much to recommend about Do the Right Thing. If you haven't seen it, I recommend you see it. Today would be a great day because today is the hottest day of the year. Number two on my list of the greatest summertime films ever is The Family Road Trip from Hell.
This summer, when you think vacation, think National Lampoon's Vacation. See the real America.
Hey, underpants. Hey, yellow.
It's friendly.
Okay, I'm okay.
Don't you want to look at the Grand Canyon?
It's educational.
Great.
And most of all, it's fun.
The dog went on the picnic basket.
Let Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Imogene Coca, Randy Quaid, John Candy, and Christy Brinkley.
Well, are you gonna go for it?
This is crazy, this is crazy, this is crazy.
Take you for a ride. This summer, when you think vacation, think National Lampoon's Vacation.
Better check under the hood.
Worth it just for Chris... stop that. Worth it just for Christy Brinkley as the woman in the convertible and all of the scenes involving her. Look, every Christmas, everybody drags out National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and they're like, oh, this is a great Christmas movie. We have to watch this. You know what? That movie cannot hold a candle to the original National Lampoon's Vacation, which, by the way, was written by John Hughes. You might remember him from films like Home Alone or The Breakfast Club. It is hilarious. It is the family road trip from hell. Everything that can go wrong does go wrong. You get to meet the crazy in-laws. Grandma dies while in the car, and they're driving around with her body on the luggage rack on top of the station wagon. The whole bit with the cousins out in the middle of out in the sticks is still a classic to this day. There are so many great comedy moments. Classic comedy moments in this movie that it needs to be on your must-watch this annually list. But no, you're going to watch Christmas Vacation. Listen, show the Griswolds some respect. Go watch the movie that started it all. You'll have a much, much better time. The number one summer movie of all time. I think this one probably has a stronger appeal with the women in the audience here at WMFO Medford.